This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Zioli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
But I wanted to turn our attention to disinformation and misinformation, because we talk a lot about that. There was some really interesting stuff that came out in the hearing that they had about COVID, and they're going to do more of this now that the Republicans are going to be in control. I hope they bring Asanto Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease doctor. You have to say that by law, of course, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Bring him in, make him testify, get to the bottom of COVID, get to the bottoms of the origins, get to all of it. The gain-of-function research, I want to know, how much was paid? What did you know? When did you know it? Excuse me. And I want to do all of this. On that point, Dr. Bhattacharya yesterday was in front of the House, and Representative Chip Roy had a good exchange with him on misinformation and this whole notion of where this comes from, and that the primary source of misinformation has actually been not you on Twitter, not your aunt on Facebook, but the federal government itself. Cut 13.
The primary source of the most important problems of misinformation have come from the federal government itself. The primary source of misinformation has been the federal government itself. And it has worked, it's used its power to manage the control, the spread of information in social media. It's used effectively propaganda techniques in order to destroy the reputations and careers of people who spoke up against to try to correct these ideas of misinformation. So just to give you some sense of what they, a few, I could go on for quite a long time. Martin mentioned the idea that immunity occurs after you have disease. That is absolutely true. This is a coronavirus. It was really clear by spring 2020 from elegant studies of mechanism immunity that was likely to be true in this case. We didn't know how long immunity would last. We didn't know exactly the mechanisms of it, but we knew from very early on in the pandemic that if you get COVID and recover, you would have pretty strong protection against both reinfection and then if you are reinfected, the severity of reinfection. The during the pandemic, especially after the vaccines came available, public health agencies denied that. And in fact, on the basis of denying that, put in place very destructive vaccine mandates that led to the loss of jobs and careers and of many people, and created a counter reaction that has led to the undermining of the consensus that most of the population had that vaccines were a really good idea. And we're seeing the fruits of that in the resurgence of polio, reductions in childhood vaccination rates, which I think are tremendously damaging. A second one. Remember, early in the pandemic, people talked about how masks weren't particularly effective in controlling spread of a highly infectious respiratory disease. Even Dr. Fauci said that at one point, I think, in February. That was reflecting the consensus based on dozen or more randomized studies, good randomized studies with the flu, where mask mandates and large-scale masking in populations did not actually control the spread of the flu.
Now, think about this for a moment. How many battles did you wage with your maybe friends or coworkers? How many times were you censored, put in Facebook jail, Twitter prison for things that you were putting out there that we know to be true now? And we see it with the resurgence of the flu. I mean, the flu with kids and RSV and kids in emergency rooms because their immune systems were suffering because of COVID and all the COVID restrictions, not because of COVID, but the COVID restrictions. We saw all of that. And then you have a Harvard epidemiologist, Dr. Martin Kulldorff, who also spoke with Representative Chip Roy on this point. And he actually discusses a little bit of COVID amnesty, but maybe not the COVID amnesty you're thinking of ever since that stupid article was published a couple weeks ago. Let's have COVID amnesty so we can forget all the times we yelled at you in public for not having your mask over your nose and all the things we did to your children and all the times we shamed you for having 12 people at your house. Let's have a COVID amnesty for that, the writer suggested. No, absolutely not. We will not forget. No way. But this kind of COVID amnesty, you know what? This is a good one. I like this. Cut 14.
There is one amnesty that I'm very much in favor of, and that is that every person who was fired because they didn't take the vaccine should be rehired with back pay. That's an amnesty that I'm very much in favor of. I think they were badly treated for unscientific reasons. And I would also include students in universities who were prevented from studying, that they should be readmitted and be compensated.
How about that? From the far left liberal institution, Harvard, a Harvard epidemiologist saying this. I know it's shocking. I'm as shocked as you are over this. But this is the problem. I mean, this is we now see that you were right. I was right. We were right. I mean, I was one of the loudest voices saying you cannot have a vaccine mandate for a vaccine that does not stop transmission of a virus and also a virus that has a fatality rate of less than 1%. It's unconscionable. Unconscionable that you could have a vaccine mandate for that. And the minute we knew that the vaccine did not prevent transmission, we never should have been ever thinking about denying people the ability to go to work or go to a restaurant or go to school because they didn't have a vaccine mandate. But remember, Harvard is mandating the vaccine if you want to go there. There's lots of liberal institutions out there. I shouldn't say liberal, but illiberal institutions that are mandating this still. And we still have a lot of people who've lost their jobs. They have not gotten their jobs back. That New York judge ruled that they are entitled to their jobs back with back pay. That's great, but that's the exception. That's not the rule. The rule should be every single person who ever lost their job, including the members of the military, to be rehired back with back pay 100%, absolutely. And for the government to have come out there and made these mandates without having all the data, without having the information, and then with denying the data and information that it did have, that proved this was a stupid policy, tells me that these people should all be fired. They're the ones who should be out of a job, if you ask me. I played this clip yesterday, but it's worth playing again. Dr. Bhattacharya was discussing medical censorship. And this is in California right now. They passed a state law. I talked about this a couple months ago, I think with Dr. Maz, actually. Gavin Newsom, the hair, passed a law which says that you could essentially lose your medical license if you're a doctor out there pushing things that are out of the realm of what the state decides it really does conjure up images of a dictatorship. The state decides what the medical dogma is. And if you go outside the lines of that, you could lose your medical license. And they signed this law into law in California. So let's say there's a doctor out there from the early days of COVID was suggesting maybe kids should not get the vaccine because Europe, it looks like myocarditis was a problem. Theoretically, that doctor could lose his license because the state of California disagrees with that position. And they'll argue that what this doctor is putting out there is medical disinformation, and they'll take away his medical license. And that's going to make doctors afraid to try new things. It's going to make doctors afraid to experiment. It's going to make doctors afraid to do trials. I mean, because the state will decide. We decide what is correct and what isn't. We decide science. And if you go outside those lines, you're done. I mean, that's a terrifying proposition, but it's real and it's happening. Well, Dr. Bhattacharya yesterday with Representative Chip Roy talking about this. Take a listen.
For any of the witnesses, what effect does medical censorship have on the medical profession in the field of science broadly? And then I'm going to turn it over to my friend from Florida.
It's a disaster. It's a disaster. When you have a new disease like this, a new epidemic like this, it is absolutely vital to get the honest ideas and opinions of every expert, no matter what conclusion they come to. You learn the truth by this kind of debate. What censorship did is it's not just that it suppressed the voices of the people that were censored, although that was bad enough. It sent a signal to the to other scientists that, look, these areas are too controversial. Stay out of them. Otherwise, you're going to lose your reputation, too. And as a result, you have this illusion of a consensus that never existed on so many topics. We robbed the American people of a true debate, a true discussion about this. I mean, it's not that we're always right. I mean, Lord knows that's not true. The issue is the truth comes from people honestly engaging with the data. Censorship kills that. Censorship kills science. And I think censorship actually killed people during this pandemic.
How about that? Censorship actually killed people during this pandemic. And a big part of the problem, obviously, with all this was social media companies. And we know this. We know that Twitter and Facebook were working with the federal government, and they still are, to try to weed out misinformation and disinformation. I put those things in air quotes. We know that the FBI has essentially a backdoor into Facebook, the Department of Justice, where they can decide what things they don't like, what doesn't agree with the party line, and have that stuff removed. I mean, that's insane that that can occur in the United States of America. But these social media companies, whether it was the Hunter Biden laptop or your opinions on the vaccine or your opinions on the origins of COVID and the lab leak, they were the first ones to shut you down. Well, Dr. Jordan Peterson talked about this a lot, how social media is part of the pollution of the domain of public discourse. He was on with Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan Uncensored. We have two clips for you today. I think Dr. Jordan Peterson is brilliant. Canadian, don't hold that against him. Smart guy. His books are fantastic. He had so many people watching him on YouTube. But eventually, of course, YouTube tried to kick him off because they didn't like what he was saying. And he's experienced this censorship directly. And Jordan Peterson has always been very outspoken because he speaks the truth. And the social media companies don't like that because very often the truth is not what the government's putting out. The government's putting out information that is vastly different from the truth, as you know. Anyway, let's start with cut 16.
Right. But the bottom line is that there is a small percentage of people generating a vast amount of noise. What impact is that happening on society, do you think?
Well, I think it skews our perceptions of what normal people are like. We assume that what we're getting, you know, when you sample the world, when you're walking through it, you make the assumption that you're getting an unbiased representation of the things going on around you. And when you're on an online platform and, say, reading comments, you also have the assumption that what you're seeing is something like a sample of public opinion. But it's not, you know, because if 10 strangers came up to you randomly in the street, then you'd have a bit of a sample of what people randomly think. But behavior online isn't random, and the people who post aren't precisely normal. And I have been talking with Jonathan Haidt and Jean Twenge about this, and I think they might know more about it than anybody else in the world. And it's pretty clear that the people who are dominating, say, online comment sections, and I would especially say this is true of the people who post anonymously, and there's other markers for this sort of behavior as well, they dominate the political discourse. And what's happening in some sense is that we have a new form of pollution that's also corporate sponsored, and it's pollution of the domain of public discourse. And the pollution occurs because the social media companies are either enabling or failing to control, you know, those known in the popular parlance as trolls. But they're not just comical trolls, you know, using derision in some cute way and having their say in the free speech domain. They're really poisonous individuals.
Yeah, and I'm all for people being able to post anonymously. I mean, the Federalist Papers were the founders writing under pseudonyms like Publius. But the distinction is what you need to do is you need to separate it. So you have real human beings interacting with real human beings because people treat each other with respect. And then you have the anonymous people and the trolls and the bots. Put them separate. That's his point about this. Put anonymous posters in a separate comment section, and then you have a choice. You can choose to engage with them if you want to, but you can also know that you're talking to a bona fide human being. He was asked that point about how Musk could fix social media. Cut 17.
I would say there's no excuse for including the anonymous posters with the real human beings. And I think that social media platforms who have a certain reach, maybe it's a million subscribers, and I don't really know what figure is appropriate, should be required to implement Know Your Customer laws, and then that the people who are posting who are genuine, verified human beings willing to abide by their words with their personal reputation should be put in one comment section, and then the online, anonymous, cowardly, narcissistic, pathological troll demons who are polluting the public discourse should be put in a different comment section. And if you want to go to hell and visit the troll demons and see what they have to spew, you can. But otherwise, you can be among the normal human beings engaged in normal civil human discourse. Right. And that would separate the bloody psychopaths from the bulk of decent, normal people. And, you know, 97% of people aren't psychopathic.
Yeah.
And so we are talking about a small minority here, but they have the upper hand.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. I'd be on board with that. And I would probably go over to the troll community for a little while just to have fun sometimes. But at least you know what you were getting. You know, in all of this, too, there was a great piece at Reason.com about disinformation and the dangers of government intervention. And the piece by Scott Shackford said, Presidents Bush and Obama mistakenly think we need their warnings about disinformation. And he writes, thanks, but we live through the lies of their administrations that they use to sell us on war and intrusive government meddling in healthcare. And he says, this week, former Presidents George Bush and Barack Obama will be at a conference lecturing about democracy and apparently warning against the spread of disinformation. The Bush administration launched a post-9/11 war that had almost no relationship with the terrorists responsible, based on bad intelligence and misleading the public about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Obama's signature domestic accomplishment, the Affordable Care Act, was dependent on him selling Americans a lie that they would be able to keep the health insurance that they had. So you see, these are guys who have employed disinformation and misinformation to sell their positions. The lies that spun out of these two administrations weren't just simple errors. They had a purpose. The lies they presented were intended to convince Americans to support their political goals, both of which involved broad government interventions abroad and at home. And isn't it funny how they both turn around and suddenly now they're the arbiters of truth and the arbiters of what we should be talking about, the arbiters of information and information. I mean, it's a joke. But this is why the government always wants to control what is true and what isn't true. And this goes back, I mean, Orwell warned about this too. They want to do this because they know that they can control the population if they can control the truth. And part of the reason why we have a First Amendment is because our founders were wise enough to understand, hey, we got to push back against that because otherwise whoever's in charge will always tell us exactly what we think that is the truth, that because they'll make it up. They'll define it to whatever suits their agenda. And that's a real problem right there. No doubt about it.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.